Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on Quirky Catnips, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park. This frightfully funny tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Find out what happens when Skitters goes cattywampus for a kitten named Harriet. Tune in each week to hear a new chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat, only on Pet Life Radio. Meow, kitties!
Audio Recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Goes Splat. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
Splat!
Meow, bitches.
Twisted Tales by Skitters the Cat. Part 8.
There's puppy love, and then there's the way cats do it. We don't just fall for any frilly feline who happens to lift their tail and wave their winker at us. Harriet makes it a point to be an especially difficult pussy to corral. As a free-range kitty, Harriet has no man-made structure in which to reside. She does have a human, a little girl named Evangeline, who comes across looking like the ghost of Christmas past. Under normal circumstances, I would have pranked Evangeline just like I do the other polygamous women who work at Gecko's Gulch. One of my favorite tricks is to bury myself in a pile of laundry and scare the bejesus out of them when they feel something moving around in the bottom of the basket. I'm not the only one who likes to put on a good freak. In all truthfulness, Evangeline does a better job of haunting the halls at Gecko's Gulch than me. Evangeline may be just a little girl, but she has a big influence on Harriet, especially when it comes to religion. Evangeline's people are part of the polygamous cult living in a deliverance-style garbage pit known as Zion Flats. These people are into multiplicity in a most astonishing way. They believe it takes three wives to get into heaven. Anyone able to bag a bushel of fuglies then faces a multi-level marketing scheme in the afterlife. These wackadoodle-doos believe heaven is divided into the telestial kingdom, the dingy basement of spirituality, the terrestrial kingdom, home to middle managers, and the celestial kingdom, where occupants get all the ice cream and vajayjay they want. These are the same folks who say God was too busy to create the earth, so he subcontracted the work to Jesus and Michael the Archangel. Jesus was a carpenter, so who knows? Incredibly, Harriet buys into all this gobbledygook just because Evangeline does. Why do those struck with extreme religiosity feel the need to take hostages? Because they can. Nephi Stratton, the prophet of Zion Flats, is an expert at exploiting such spiritual detainees. By dangling the keys to the three kingdoms in front of his followers, Stratton is able to have his way all day, every day.
Chapter 8. Nephi Stratton.
Bleed the beast! Bleed the beast! Bleed the beast!
Members of the order were hot tonight. I leached out a slow smile. I'm not just saving money on air conditioning, I'm saving souls. My divine vision is the only thing standing between my people and the flames of Armageddon. No one can ignore the signs of the second coming. The blood moon in February, the relentless drought, the onslaught of outsiders maligning the word of God. The right to plural marriage, as promised in the Doctrine and Covenants, is under attack. The constant incursion by vengeful apostates strikes fear into the hearts of the righteous. We must act now to protect our way of life. To underscore the seriousness of the situation, I've directed the order to meet nightly when the clock strikes 12. As proof of their worthiness, They have been called to spill their own blood for the sake of the cause. For without sacrifice, they are nothing in the eyes of God, and therefore nothing in the eyes of me. Only the most worthy are called to the quorum, known simply as the order. These are the men who have sworn their allegiance to me, signed with the very blood coursing through their bodies. The name Nephi reigns supreme in all households in Zion Flats. My people bleed my name, just as the righteous bleed the beast. A new candidate is being ordained into the order tonight. I watch as he receives the hallowed dagger. He doesn't think I see his hands shaking. He's nervous. Good. This endowment is reserved for only the most obedient and holy members of our community. I watch as he uses the dagger to carve the name of the only true prophet, Nephi, into his inner left arm. He tries not to wince, knowing this would signal weakness. It is only by making my name immortal that he can prove his loyalty.
Bleed the beast! Bleed the beast! Bleed the beast!
The power behind this chant is like the sweetest music to my ears. I didn't get to be the prophet of Zion Flats by not understanding how easily people can be manipulated. Having a congregation of cotton-headed simpletons helps, especially the women. They're so eager to get to the celestial kingdom, they'll do anything I say. When it comes to ripping off the government, it's become a sacred duty. Nothing is quite so satisfying as getting back at the infidels who don't respect our way of life. The order may as well have been chanting, "More babies, more checks." Our women are sealed to their husbands in spiritual marriages. Not that it means anything to the heretics who run the government. As righteous retribution, by not recognizing the sanctity of these unions, our sister wives are considered single mothers, ones eligible for a sideboard of welfare benefits. The only problem now is genetics. I've read enough about familial interbreeding to make the whites drain out of my eyes. To protect my underlings, I don't allow them access to the internet. They aren't enlightened enough to handle such knowledge. This is for members of the order who know how to use the information to best serve Heavenly Father and our divine destination. Most of it is filth anyway. However, there is no denying the effects of a small gene pool. The women in our community have been cranking out biological rejects at an alarming rate. I needed fresh stock for the purpose of promulgating the species. Looking to outsiders proved to be a fatal mistake. Nicholas DeLuca, the pagan from Sin City, swooped in and duped everyone. Even me. At first, I was all ears when DeLuca spun his web of deceit about how to grow our population and thus increase the amount of money we can bilk out of our amoral government. DeLuca's idea was to bring in brides from outside the area. His suggestion was tempting. The gene pool in Zion Flats has grown so small, I can't keep up with all the dull-eyed window lickers the women in my community give birth to. I'm married to a bunch of them, which means they can't all be morally corrupt. Nonetheless, I'm a busy man and don't have all day to get rid of these lumpy half-wits. After DeLuca wormed his way in, he went to work decimating the very people who were helping him hide from the law. I still haven't recovered all the money he skimmed from our church welfare program. As the prophet of Zion Flats, it is my duty to distribute resources. In addition to regular tithing, the sale of food stamps is a necessary tool in keeping the coffers full in Zion Flats. The members who are most reverent are rewarded with more food from the community pantry. The rest have to repent until they can work their way into my good graces. Nicholas DeLuca was associated with some very unsavory women from Las Vegas, who he claimed could be easily recruited. Like all the other lies he told, DeLuca never followed through. What he did do was defile Rebecca Simmons, a wickedly beautiful woman with a wretched heart. I'm a good 30 years older than Rebecca, but if she had married me instead of Nicholas DeLuca, she'd still be alive today. Maybe. Rebecca's kin have never been up to any good. They came to us on the run from those seeking to end the righteous lifestyle of polygamy in Canada. Several of the men had been rounded up and thrown into Canadian jails. The ones who got away gathered up all the women and children and fled to Zion Flats. From the get-go, the Simmons were nothing but trouble. I wish to God now that they had stayed in Canada. Even as a child, Rebecca was a striking young thing, tempting men in a way that God finds abominable. She was mean about it, too, taunting and teasing. Rebecca needed to learn her place. I always knew Nicholas DeLuca was corrupt. Presenting him with Rebecca's hand in marriage was a strategic move on my part. Of course, DeLuca had to marry my sister, Orinda, first. She's uglier than a lard bucket full of month-old grease, but Orinda is a soldier for the cause. I doubt DeLuca had her on his sleeping schedule. Orinda is barren, and therefore not worth the moxie it would take for marital relations. Rebecca turned out to be almost as fruitless. I lost track of all the babies she miscarried. The one that survived is about as useless as a one-legged cat trying to bury a turd on a frozen lake. The only reason Rebecca's opaque-colored daughter, Evangeline, is still wandering around is because social services got involved. When Boyd Fletcher, the meddlesome moron of Granite Ridge, found Evangeline staggering around in the middle of the night, he called the cops. The next thing you know, a fleet of cherry tops are churning up the dust all the way from Naval. The first thing these donut munchers found was Rebecca's body crumpled up like a bloody paper sack. Rebecca had jumped to her death after hearing her con artist of a husband was permanently out of the picture. Orinda had moved Rebecca's body, which got the fuzz all up in a tizzy. Why hadn't she called? Well, for one thing, officer, Orinda doesn't have a phone. The busybodies in the suits headed out here next and started asking about things they have no right to know. How is Evangeline doing? Is Evangeline getting enough to eat? Evangeline's nose is running. Why don't you do something about it? What do you want me to do? Sponge her nose off with my shirt tail? Evangeline is one of the most dispensable zeros I've got loitering around Zion Flats. Her kind usually doesn't last long in these parts. As head of my church, it's my moral responsibility to trim the dead wood. Right now, Evangeline's only redeeming quality is the welfare check she brings in each month. It's hardly worth all the hassle of dealing with this dolt. Evangeline has a habit of leaving Zion Flats when no one is looking. I've caught her slinking around Juniper Hollow more than once. No amount of corporal punishment can stop her. She goes there to pet a scrawny orange cat. Evangeline's mother kept cats. Witches always do. I hope Evangeline's despicable creature contracts rabies. Then we could get rid of Evangeline, but still get her check.
Hang tight, kiddies. We'll be back in a scratch. Pack your bags, kiddies. It's time to take a trip to quirky cannabis country. Find out what happens when a writer turns to reality TV as a way to cure an apocalyptic case of writer's block. Reefer Madness Ensues in Quirky Cannabis Country by Adele Park. Get Quirky Cannabis Country today on Audible.com, Overdrive, and BookBeat.
You know the expression? Cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We now return to more of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park on Pet Life Radio.
There was a time when I thought Evangeline might lead me to the missing money. Her father, Nicholas DeLuca, likely grubbed more dough from the church food stamp program than anyone even realizes. I followed Evangeline to Juniper Hollow several times. She diddles around the remains of the house like she's paralyzed from the neck up. I've never seen Evangeline in the lake, but I know she swims in it. You can smell it on her. Hard to believe someone that young could make it all the way to Granite Ridge. She definitely knows that place. DeLuca used to bring her along when he was quarrying stone from Granite Ridge. They got out there in a rowboat, but that burned in the fire, along with DeLuca's other baneful belongings. No one could prove the fire was arson. Not that his mob family in Las Vegas wanted to have the police crawling up their buzzers. In fact, I haven't seen a single sign of those degenerate mobsters since DeLuca went missing, as the coppers like to say. I imagine they were just glad to lap up a big insurance check from the fire. The Fletchers are the ones responsible for igniting the hedonistic history of Juniper Hollow. Thinking they were big shots, the Fletcher family bought the property back in the early 1920s and built a disgracefully fancy house, just to show everyone how important they were. They went belly up when the growth in this area centered around Naval. This was before the righteous people left and formed the sanctuary now known as Zion Flats. Scrambling for money, the Fletchers started distilling moonshine in the catacombs underneath the ridge. They must have double-crossed the mobsters they were selling to, because they lost ownership of Juniper Hollow. For reasons I can't fathom, the Fletchers hung on to Granite Ridge, the land overlooking Juniper Hollow. Still briny and burning from their financial failures, the Fletchers kept tabs on the activities happening below. The feds were called in, time and again, to try and stop the DeLucas from bootlegging booze, the very thing the Fletchers had been doing. Somehow these godless gangsters always managed to stay one step ahead of the law. I was a young snollyguster of a boy during the time the DeLucas were brewing their hateful poison in the caves under Granite Ridge. My father, Ezekiel, may have been responsible for helping root out these hellions, though I don't know for sure. There was a lot of upheaval in Naval during those trying times. The town leaders were making plans to sell out to the government by abolishing our celestial right to practice plural marriage. Righteous people, like my father, began buying up property in the area that has now become Zion Flats. In an effort to cleanse the new promised land, a group of men from the government decided to put a stop to the activities at Juniper Hollow, once and for all. A grisly raid took place during the wee morning hours of April 29, 1930. By the time the sun was fully up, the blood of six hooligans from the DeLuca clan had seeped into the soil at Juniper Hollow. Three federal agents were also killed in the massive shootout. The thugs who survived were jailed, never to see the light of day again. For a long time, the property remained vacant. Then, Nicholas DeLuca showed up to spin his legacy of lies. At this point, Boyd Fletcher had turned the old hunting cabin on Granite Ridge into his permanent residence. Boyd, an angry growler of a man, is still nursing the grudges of his forefathers. With all the hatred of a sore loser, Boyd wastes his pitiful life trying to cause trouble at Juniper Hollow. Nothing's ever come from his third-rate spying, so I don't know what he gets from all this. It's not like there was much to look at anyway. Boyd had a clear view of the house when it was still standing, but it's impossible to see anything between the gazebo DeLuca built in the middle of the lake and the caves underneath Granite Ridge, which was where all the action was. Back in the days when I thought DeLuca was on our side, he built the pavilion we used for our consecrated wedding ceremonies. There's a natural island in the center of the lake, covered in cheatgrass, that somehow stays green all year long, even when there hasn't been a drop of rain. The pavilion was constructed so well it could survive the apocalypse. Polished steps lead up to the open column structure, crafted from rock quarried at Granite Ridge. DeLuca was able to con some goobers in St. George out of the green metal used for the dome on top. DeLuca built it this way on purpose, knowing the only thing that could be seen from Granite Ridge was a rounded green blur. He could have murdered someone under that dome, and Boyd Fletcher wouldn't have a clue. In my opinion, the most heinous crimes DeLuca committed were aimed at me. During DeLuca's time at Juniper Hollow, he quietly placed into question my authority as prophet of Zion Flats. As a result, an insurgency led by Rebecca Simmons' brother, Willard, boiled up to the surface. I was eventually able to kick this ungrateful rabble-rouser out, but not the rest of the Simmons. They're all tied in with our church welfare redistribution efforts. I can't afford to lose the hefty amount of government checks the women in the Simmons family add to our coffers. The Simmons men have been put on notice. Comply or else. If any one of them steps out of line, they're escorted away from Zion Flats in record time. I make sure their wives are reassigned to other men before they've crossed the county line. This is what happens when we purge someone. They go, and their wives stay. Just about everybody in Zion Flats was glad to see Willard get his walking papers. He had been a throbbing splinter in the side of the community from the beginning. Even as a young cuss, Willard was always getting in fights, usually with boys a lot bigger than him. Some said Willard liked to torture animals for fun. Girls didn't like him much either. Initially, I tried to set Willard on the path to righteousness by assigning wives who knew how to humble him. The first wife made my sister, Orinda, look like a blue ribbon beauty. I don't know how he did it, but Willard had her in a family way most of the time. He eventually got a couple of other wives, but one of them is hissing mean, and the other is a doddering dunce who can't tie her own shoes. I waited until the mess with DeLuca was over before ousting Willard. He didn't go easily. Reassigning his wives was no pleasure cruise either. I married one of them myself, thinking I should lead by example. I regret that decision to this day, even though I don't have her on my sleeping schedule and rarely ever darken her door for a visit. If Willard has plans to retaliate, he's taking his sweet time doing it. I've heard he's got a construction crew in St. George. There's a lot of discarded trash from Zion Flats living there. It is my solemn duty as prophet to eliminate any male who isn't a good candidate for the priesthood. It's a math problem, really. We get equal amounts of boys and girls being born here. To ensure all is going according to God's celestial plan, I must remove any young buck who doesn't demonstrate promise as a righteous follower. The heretics refer to them as the lost boys. The reality is, a lot of these so-called lost boys aren't really lost at all. They're shacking up in St. George, pounding nails for the apostates. With Willard Simmons and Nicholas DeLuca out of the way, things should be getting back to normal around here. None of DeLuca's people ever visit Juniper Hollow because it's on the federal government's radar. DeLuca's brat, Evangeline, doesn't realize it isn't in her best interest to keep haunting Juniper Hollow. If she keeps it up, Evangeline really will be a ghost. What bothers me is that Evangeline isn't the only one lurking around. I could tell whoever it is, there's nothing left to see. The house is gone and all the people in it. Pretty soon, Evangeline will probably be gone too.
Don't be a jerk. Listen to The Quirk. Quirky Cat gets ghosted, that is. This zany audiobook by Adele Park is The Cat's Meow. Find out what happens when a ghost gets trapped at the DMV and requires the assistance of a snarky cat named Skitters to help her cross over.
I'm so happy I could heave hairballs.
Quirky Cat gets ghosted. Get ghosted today on audible.com.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.